This is the Top 25 Rundown. And here's your host, Alan West.
Good evening and welcome to the Top 25 Rundown presented by the Sportscast. Today is August 9th, 2023. If you haven't yet, please subscribe on all your channels, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch.tv, and Apple Podcasts. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please leave me a rating and review. It will help us out tremendously. We are also on DAB Digital Radio. You can listen to us on your smart speaker, play Sportscast. You can also visit us on the sportscast.net. Also follow us on Twitter, Sportscast1, and check out our app, the Sportscast, in the iOS App Store. Hello and good evening. My name is Alan West. Welcome to the Top 25 Rundown. Today, we are lucky enough to have Brian Woods, founder and CEO of the Prep Super League. Brian, it is a pleasure to have you here, sir.
Alan, thanks for having me on this evening.
Now, I was taking a look at some of the other organizations and activities that you were able to set up, and one of the ones that I noticed that was very impressive is the USFL. You were president of that, of the restart of that.
Yeah, that was, I was involved with the USFL. I was the founder of the new iteration of the USFL and got a chance to be the league president for the first season. Got the USFL off the ground, and now I'm on to my next entrepreneurial endeavor, if you will. But it was definitely an exciting time, and that was coming off of the Spring League, which I ran for 5 years as a true developmental league for the National Football League. So, definitely have been involved on in the entrepreneurial side of sports for the better part of the past decade, but the USFL was definitely a very exciting venture to be involved with.
Very nice. So for the press release I have for the Prep Super League, how it features elite high school players to launch in spring 2024. It's going to feature collegiate game rules, 4- and 5-star prospects, and national competition in New York. It was announced in New York for the launch, the brainchild, and the founder of it. You, sir, the league will kick off next spring, feature 4- and 5-star prospects. The games will be streamed live. The 6-week season will run from April 19th to May 24th with teams located in Atlanta, Cleveland, Dallas, Houston, New Jersey, New Orleans, Los Angeles, Miami, Phoenix, San Diego, San Francisco, and Tampa. So for those areas, what made you decide to pick some of those areas?
Yeah, I think, Alan, for us, it was really about trying to identify the markets that historically have produced the greatest number of Division I athletes, especially the 4- and 5-star players. So obviously there are certain states that the Prep Super League would probably never operate in because they've not had a 5-star, let alone maybe a 4-star recruit, you know, come out of that state. But we wanted to have a presence in the big three, which obviously is Florida, Texas, and California. And we wanted to be present in all the markets that have produced the most talent over the last 10, 15 years. And that means, you know, Division I talent and obviously well represented on opening day rosters around the NFL. So markets like New Orleans and Louisiana, and even a place like Atlanta and the state of Georgia in general, Georgia puts out more talent right now per capita than any state. So, and a lot of people don't know that, but obviously when you think about high school football, you can't have a conversation about the best athletes without mentioning an area like Houston or Miami, Fort Lauderdale. So we really wanted to be in the markets where talent historically is coming from. And that's even parts like, even that bodes well for a place like New Jersey or Ohio and Pennsylvania. But we're well represented, which is to say that we have a minimum geographical footprint throughout the country for our first season. We will probably rapidly expand this operation, but we're very excited about the first season and the markets that we're going to be operating out of.
Yeah, they definitely, just looking at some of those, they're very intriguing to me just because, like you said, for the 4- and 5-stars, and also just when you look at college football, a lot of those areas, they have some of the premier schools that you're always going to see on TV throughout the different networks. Speaking of that very quickly, I'm sure you saw what happened with the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, how do you think that that's going to possibly factor with your league for the high school students?
I think, look, what's happening in the college football landscape is really evolving very quickly. The conference consolidation is something I've been predicting for quite some time now. And we knew even last year when we were preparing the business model for the Prep Super League, our hypothesis was that the NCAA football and to a greater extent, the SEC and the Big Ten were really becoming the new NFL. And we felt like just noticing the sort of money that was flowing through college sports, the $1 billion rights fee that the Big Ten had just garnered, we felt like we could create a product with the 4 and 5 star players that in due course could be commensurate with college football play. And we felt like that would warrant considerable media consideration. So our idea is if NCAA football is the new NFL, elite college sports might be the new NCAA and might be able to garner media attention, substantial marketing dollars at some point. So we do see the landscape changing very quickly amongst the major conferences. And I think it only proves out our hypothesis or theory, if you will, about creating the Prep Super League and why we feel like there's a market out there for this property.
Very nice. So I saw that when I was doing a little research, you had talked about how you're planning on using NIL in high school. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, so look, Alan, here's what I would tell you. When we set out to create the Prep Super League, there was a lot of, there was quite a catalyst for it in the rapidly changing landscape that is NCAA football. The transfer portal has created a phenomenon where 400 to 500 fewer scholarships per year over the last 2 years are making their way to high school players as college programs opt to sign a more experienced player out of the transfer portal. More importantly, travel and club sports has really grown rapidly over the last 10 years. And just about every sport, every athlete at the Division I level has probably participated in some club or travel faction along the way, but there is none for 11-on-11 football. So we felt like we were filling a void on a lot of fronts, but specifically, we felt like there really needed to be a supplemental platform out there for 11-on-11 high school football. So we feel really good about the model itself. But that being said, 5 years ago, this would have been a great concept because there was no supplemental platform out there to traditional high school sponsored football. The NIL component that you're alluding to really does serve as kind of a catalyst for us, because we want to make sure that we're bringing in the top players. We want this to be viewed as the very best high school football in America. And the only way to do that is to make sure we're going into the right markets that produce the most talent, and then subsequently signing the best talent from those markets. To do that, we needed a catalyst. And I think NIL really opened up the door for us to do that. Obviously, some of the states we operate in, not all of them have NIL, but in those situations, we could have a player come in, take an NIL deal, and participate in the Prep Super League. And that will be their football program that they participate in throughout their high school career. In states where it is allowed, the Prep Super League is really a value proposition to the player, because now they come into a league where there's more visibility. We're going to be playing a national schedule. And ultimately, any sort of NIL deal that they're entertaining or looking to pursue is going to be worth exponentially more by participating in the Prep Super League. But to your question, and really to your point, Alan, NIL is going to play a very big part in terms of our talent procurement and securing the best athletes.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's very interesting. One other thing that I know that it kind of interested me when I was taking a look at some of the information for the Prep Super League was at some point, do you think that you're going to do an All-American game for like the Prep Super League, kind of how they have the Under Armour one usually during Thanksgiving weekend, maybe in a few years? Do you think that's something you may want to possibly look at doing if it works out? Let me rephrase that. Not if it works out, just as the model gets bigger and bigger every year.
Yeah, I think absolutely. Look, we are looking to grow this operation very quickly. We feel like there's a massive need for all the environmental factors that are out there right now that I just mentioned. So I think anything we can do to build upon our property, and whether that's some sort of showcase event, like you mentioned, in an all-star format, I think that's something we would certainly entertain in the near term. So I don't think you're too far off. And I do think it's something that we would certainly look at and evaluate, and maybe not so much our first season, but in subsequent years.
Sure, of course. I mean, it was just something that came to mind when I was looking and just how this is going to be, just because, I mean, since you're going to have all the teams play in 6 weeks, is it going to be after the end of the 6 weeks, is it going to be hopefully one undefeated team, or how are you going to have, say, a champion?
Yeah, I think we're looking at more of an overall statistical win-loss category for crowning a champion at the end of our first season. One thing that Alan was really important to us is that the season did not linger, because we still view ourselves as very much a supplemental platform to traditional high school football. And we don't want to be viewed antagonistic to the current structure. That being said, the 6 week season felt right to us and felt like it was the right amount of time. It was the right amount of games, but we didn't want to drag it into a postseason that could take us into June. We felt like the operation in April and May, and being able to wind down mid to late May when student athletes are about ready to finish their year in school, was the perfect time for us to finish the season. But in future years, we could potentially look at the opportunity to evaluate a postseason game, against the conference or have a semifinals or a traditional playoff format. That's something that is not off the table, at least as of yet, for future seasons.
Okay. No, I mean, just from what I'm reading here, I'm definitely excited about it. And the live streaming, how you're able to do that, it's something that when I read about that was intriguing also. Would you like to go into that a little bit?
Yeah, so we are creating our own direct-to-consumer platform, and part of it is the technology that you just alluded to, which is the ability to stream our games in real time. So when fans watch our games, they're going to be able to watch our games just like they're there in the stadium with sub-second latency, and that's quicker than anything that's out there right now. And part of the problem is most of the major sports leagues are still tied to traditional linear contracts, meaning if I'm on broadcast television, there's probably anywhere from a 20 to 25 second delay from the time the actual play happens to the time I view the game at home. If you're talking about an ESPN Plus or another streaming similar platform, you could be looking at upwards of a 45 second to longer delay. So the opportunity here to engage maybe a younger viewer audience with real-time watch parties and the ability to see real-time stats and maybe compete in competitions and things like that. Bringing in the company that we are utilizing for this technology is really a game changer for us. So there's a lot of real unique broadcast components that we're going to integrate with our games that I think the traditional fan is really going to get into. But I can assure you that it's not going to look like a traditional high school football game. This will definitely look very technologically advanced, with data tracking, real-time stats, and the ability to watch games in literally sub-second latency.
That's great. And I know that another thing that will help with for the foreign five-star recruits, I'll definitely make it to where when they want to have some of their recruiting highlights, so definitely be able to see them a lot quicker too.
That's exactly right. And I think part of what we're doing is unique in that, we're going to run from mid-April to late May, and that's also the prime recruiting season for all the Division I programs. And so really gives them an opportunity, versus a 7-on-7, which isn't real football or football in a real context. The 11-on-11 format that we're utilizing, it really provides a great evaluation tool for the Division I programs that are looking to evaluate players.
No, that's great. And just seeing how this is, you say that I think the first practices are the first or second week of April, correct?
Yeah, we're going to go into practice first week in April. We'll probably get anywhere from, I would say, 14 to 17 practices in before the first week of games. And then we're rolling pretty quickly from there week one kicking off April 19th and then finishing up with week six, the weekend of May 24th.
That's great. Watching how college football is right now, is there anything that you've noticed that besides what you've already talked about, that if you had the chance to say anything about it, what would you say just for the landscape right now?
100%. I would say the landscape, number one, as I just mentioned, is quickly evolving. But the one thing I've always felt, I'm very a strong advocate for this, is that the universities and the massive conferences, it's time to pay the players. It's time to compensate them in one way, shape, or form. NIL is certainly a start to that. But I see the unionization efforts that are underway and the ability to potentially classify athletes as employees of the university. I don't think we would have even entertained this subject or topic 10, 15 years ago. But if you look at, again, what we discussed earlier, the amount of money that's flowing through these colleges and major conferences is significant. So the idea that this money shouldn't be flowing back to Division I football and basketball players is just, it's absurd. So I think there could be, and I've seen even an op-ed this week where there could be a faction of college athletes that are there and are just there as more or less employees and aren't necessarily there enrolling in college and taking a traditional curriculum. And that's where I feel like in some instances, college football and college basketball could be headed. So you could have there, you could have your traditional student athletes and you could have some people there that are actually being paid to be there. We'll see, time will tell, but I do believe it's time to do what's right for the college athlete. And I think the universities and college conferences have profited off the backs of these athletes for quite some time now. So I think it's time to reward them for just the sort of status and prominence and the amount of money that they've been able to, you know, bring to these respective universities and conferences.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't have said it better. And just watching how it has been and how it's even been changing in the last 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to just see how it goes. And Brian, I know that unfortunately you're going to have to jump off in a second. Now, if we wanted to find information, we would go to prepsuperleague.com, correct?
That's correct. Prepsuperleague.com, at prepsuperleague with Twitter and all of our other social media handles. Granted, we've been a little quiet here the last several weeks since we announced, but there will be a lot of news coming out in the coming weeks and coming months. We'll be announcing coaches this fall. We'll be announcing some of our marquee players that are going to be participating during the fall months, and a lot of big announcements as it relates to our media components and some of the technology that we're going to be integrated with the league. So the fans will definitely have a lot of news coming their direction here in due course.
No, I mean, that's great. And I appreciate that you were able to take the time. I apologize that unfortunately my computer is not the quickest this week. So
it's okay. Well, no kid. I mean, look, I'll certainly come back on your show again in another time when we can discuss even more as we get closer to starting the season. But it was a real, real pleasure being with you here this evening.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. I hope you have a great rest of your night. And I look forward to having another talk and learning even more about the league. Okay.
Thanks so much, Alan. Take care.
Thank you, sir. You too.
See you.
All righty. That was Brian Woods, CEO and founder of the Prep Super League. And it's going to be a 12-team league. And that, just listening to everything he talked about, I think that it will be the next step for how they're going to set up for elite players. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes. It's going to be a difference, possibly a difference maker, just like how the Big Ten and how all the mergers have happened for the Pac-12 just since last week. Now, very quickly before we jump into more college sports, we do have breaking news. Michael Lorenzen became the fourth pitcher to complete a no-hitter for the Phillies, so congratulations to him. And we did talk about women's soccer last week, and unfortunately, the U.S. women, they lost by a millimeter. to Sweden, and, well, we're going to see what happens. Now, we've had some news even today about Northwestern, where the players and the coaches, they were given a T-shirt, and it's the athletic director did not like it because it says Cats Against the World, and it has Pat Fitzgerald's number. The athletic director says it's inappropriate, offensive, and tone deaf. I'm not going to say that he is wrong, but with how the situation is, probably that shirt isn't the best for people, for the players to wear, but it's giving them unity, which right now Northwestern needs more than ever. We're going to see how that goes, and we're just going to keep an eye on it, just like how everything else has happened. And Northwestern, I'm definitely curious to see what happens for that. In other news, Ohio State's athletic director, Gene Smith, is going to retire in 2024. On an article from ESPN, he announced that he's retiring at the end of the 23-24 academic season. He has led the Buckeyes athletic department since March 2005. His last day is going to be June 30th, 2024. In a statement, he says, "I have always believed that a leader seeks to be the right person at the right time in the life of the institution." He said Wednesday at a news conference, "I believe that July 2024 is the right time to welcome new leadership to build upon what we have achieved and continue to build upon the great tradition in athletics and business advancement at Ohio State." He is forever grateful. The university president, Christina Johnson, in November, announced that she'd be stepping down at the conclusion of 2022-2023 academic year, and the university is still searching for a replacement. Smith is the eighth athletic director from Ohio State and the third longest-serving athletic director in school history. He wants to step aside before a permanent president is chosen, so they would have the runway to put their blueprint on the department. He said that, "I believe with this presidential change, which will be highly positive, whether they hire, it gives him or her the opportunity to hire their leader and make a run and build on what these coaches and staff and the student athletes have already done." He has been at the head or forefront of the Big Ten's expansion efforts over the past year, which culminated Friday with news that Oregon and Washington would also join USC and UCLA in the Big Ten next fall. Smith said that Fox brought new money to the table for Oregon and Washington, and that the figures inside the media rights deal with Fox, CBS, and NBC stayed the same for the schools already in the conference. Under Smith's stewardship, the Buckeyes have won 32 team and 117 individual national championships, as well as 115 team and 369 individual titles within the Big Ten. He did admit that the hardest challenge in his department was 2011, when they had the tattoo scandal with quarterback Terrell Pryor and four of the players suspended for the first five games that season for selling memorabilia and receiving improper benefits from a tattoo parlor. And Jim Tressel was fired that year, and Luke Fickell took over on interim that year until Urban Meyer was hired in 2012. So Gene Smith, he was a Cleveland native, played college football at Notre Dame. He had been an athletic director at Arizona State, Iowa State, and started out at Eastern Michigan. So we are going to wish him the best of luck. We're going to see what happens with that. And unfortunately, we had two people that we talked about, the Drexel player who unfortunately passed away, and unfortunately, Liberty University, Taj Boyd, they did announce that unfortunately he, when he passed away, it was because of suicide, and thoughts and prayers go to his family and just mental health is something that's that you're seeing even more in college athletics, where people are having different situations where they need help, and getting them the help is something that's going to be even more important than playing the game. So let's hope that they're able to make more changes so that that can be at the forefront of different things that are going on. Now, the NCAA, this week they had two people that were denied because of two-time transfers. They are starting to apply new criteria for transfers to make it more difficult to gain immediate eligibility. And that happened the day after Florida State defensive tackle Darnell Jackson Jr., North Carolina receiver Devontae Walker had the waivers rejected. For the North Carolina, he had both of those players are two-time transfers, and they changed schools to be close to their family. They transferred believing they would have their waiver approved based on previous guidelines, which did take into account family circumstances. So, seeing that Walker had begun at North Carolina Central, never played there because of COVID, he transferred to Kent State for 2 years, and then now he wanted to go to North Carolina. But because he never played at North Carolina Central, they believe that North Carolina believes Walker should be a one-time transfer. So we're going to see how that goes. For Walker's case, Kent State filed a waiver in support of his immediate ability at North Carolina. Before the NCAA changed its rules, it was near certainty that the waiver would have helped him gain eligibility. But since the rule changed, the NCAA refuses to review that waiver at all. Now, North Carolina's Governor Roy Cooper has gotten involved, and he's trying to help on Walker's behalf as well, saying in the letter, "This is the first time I have taken such an action, but this is an unusual and compelling case amidst the backdrop of all the major changes happening in the NCAA. Jackson started his career at Maryland before transferring to Miami and then Florida State. He told reporter Tuesday, "I came home for my mom. She thinks it's her fault, but it's not. I'm going to continue to be there for my mom and see how things play out." Senator Marco Rubio, who represents Florida, also sent a letter to Baker for him to reconsider Jackson's waiver request, stating, "Strong communities are built from strong families. I commend Darryl for his decision to put family first and move home. The NCAA's decision to deny Darryl's waiver request sends a wrong message to a young adult when confronted with family health." They're not wrong. Jackson, with his appeal being denied, Florida State's looking to continue to explore avenues for eligibility, because that is a shame, because both of those players, they did come home for family, and you could see that in Walker's case, he definitely should have it, his eligibility granted so that he would be able to play for North Carolina. Jackson, I think since he did, I believe he did play at Maryland a little bit, that his is a little bit tougher, but even still, with how the NCAA is having a hard time right now controlling the NIL, I think that they're trying to level more stringent rules for other circumstances. And unfortunately, with the two-time transfer policy, this is one that they decided it would be the best idea to try to talk about and use it as an example, which unfortunately I disagree, but there's not much you can really say about that. Now, since last week, you are seeing that Stanford and Cal have been approached by the ACC. We're going to see how that goes, just because we talked about how Florida State, they already are looking at leaving, even though they had to pay the $120 million exit fee, plus they'd have to try to get out of the agreement they have for the media deal with the ACC till was 2032 or 2036. Now, if Stanford and Cal come, the question is, where is the money going to come and how are they going to, is this going to be a way that they're going to renegotiate their deal, or are they going to try to figure something else out? Because you just saw for the Big Ten, Fox gave the Big Ten the money so that Oregon and Washington could join the conference. We're going to have to wait and see on that. The president of Washington State University talked about how right now they're in a very bad spot at the Pac-12 breakup. So the question is going to be, how are they going to proceed, whether if the Pac-12, depending on which, if Cal and Stanford stay, or if it's just Washington State and Oregon State, are they going to merge with, say, the Mountain West, or if they're going to try to get a few other teams, or if you're going to see a conference like the ACC, if they can figure out how to do it, maybe try to get more teams from the West instead of the second division. I don't really see that happening, just because right now it feels like if any other conference is going to try to flex their muscle, but they haven't yet, it would be the Southeastern Conference. But with how Commissioner Sankey talked about, they're happy with who they have right now and where the locations are, I can't see that happening. Unless the Big 12 is going to try to step in and add a few more teams, it could be possible, but I think where they are right now, they're good. So it's more just looking like they're going to try to merge with a smaller conference, although whichever conference gets Stanford, they're going to try to see if Notre Dame will come with them. Even though Notre Dame already plays their basketball in the ACC and has lacrosse and other sports in a different conference, we're just going to see how that goes, because it's going to be something that we're going to need to keep in mind. And another news, Texas A&M and the 12th Man Foundation, they stopped their NIL arm, which I think part of that is because after what happened the year before. They said that they got a memo from the IRS in June that says nonprofits collected that were created primarily to pay players are not likely from exempt from taxes, meaning donations will not likely be tax deductible. And the thing about that is charity organization experts note the IRS memo could upend a rapidly growing market of collectives that have become a primary source of NIL deal for athletes. Which means that if the donations aren't tax deductible, people may not donate. So the 12th Foundation is still going to be a player and athlete deal, but it's changing how they're done and paid for it. Because now donors will just donate to the foundation generally, and the foundation will use those dollars to enter into NIL deals to promote the foundation. And originally that was seen as a trailblazing effort to bring the collective under the umbrella of a major athletic booster program. The NCAA sent a memo to the Division I member of schools soon after it was launched that entities acting on behalf of the institution cannot pay for the athletes for NIL. Texas, Arkansas, and a handful of other states have passed laws to allow school athletic departments to be more closely involved in deals for athletes and to provide legal protection from NCAA enforcement over NIL activities. This is from ESPN as well, from the AP. All right, and college basketball for the women. Paige Beckers is a name that we have not been able to talk about because she has been injured. Looks like she is finally cleared to where she can play basketball again. So that's going to be something that's going to be a change. And we're going to see how UConn does this coming year. Speaking on how the Pac-12 dissolved, SEC Commissioner Sankey says he felt sadness about it. So he's not the only one, but unfortunately, when unrealistic expectations were given by how the agreement was going to be laid out, when you have to hope that people are going to join a streaming service so that the schools can get paid, it's not a very good business model. And because of that, that's what was the axe that sent Oregon, Washington to the Big Ten. And the Washington State president said that when they left, they sealed the Pac-12 fate, which can't argue with it, but it is still something that you had to expect was going to happen, because if you're not going to make sure that the schools are going to be focused on and made sure that they'll be able to be funded in a way that's going to benefit the school and help them to be successful in their recruiting and just for viewership, and also just for wanting to have people come to their different stadiums for different sports. It's a frustrating thing, but it's something that we're just going to have to wait and see how it goes, because we're not done yet, and it's going to be more of a discussion, especially not only with football season, but just as we're watching all the sports throughout the college season. Now, when Washington moved, they said the Big Ten was for stability, which I can definitely see, because the Big Ten, the way that they have everything set up, they have the TV deals and they have a certain amount of money that comes from those deals split between all the schools, and that definitely helps them. But like I was saying, for Paige Beckers, according to an article by Alexa Philippou, she has been cleared with roughly 1 year after ACL injury and surgery. She posted on Instagram saying, "All cleared and ready for takeoff," adding 369 in reference to the number of days since her surgery. God did. So we're going to wish her the best in this coming year and see what happens, just because it's going to be interesting just with how UConn always is, and going through now. It's almost time for not only football to start, but we also have women's volleyball, men and women's soccer, field hockey, and cross country. Today, why don't we try to go through some of the rankings that we have so far, because they've already released the rankings. So for the men's, we have, for the United Soccer Coaches poll, Syracuse at number one, Indiana number two, Kentucky number three, Duke number four, Pitt number five, Washington number six, Stanford number seven, Creighton number eight, Clemson number nine, UNC Greensboro, number 10, Marshall, number 11, Vermont, number 12, Portland, number 13, Maryland, number 14, Virginia, number 15, Tulsa, number 16, Georgetown, number 17, Wake Forest, number 18, SMU, number 19, Cornell, number 20, Florida International, number 21, Akron, number 22, New Hampshire, number 23, St. Louis, number 24, and Penn rounds out the top 25. So that's for men's soccer. And let's go ahead and jump over to women's soccer and see the preseason rankings they have for women's soccer. You have UCLA, the unanimous pick for first place votes, number one. North Carolina's number two. Notre Dame's number three. Duke's number four. Virginia's number five. Florida State's number six. Alabama's number seven. Arkansas's number eight. TCU's number nine. Penn State's number 10. Stanford's number 11. South Carolina's number 12. BYU's number 13, Pitt's number 14, Texas is number 15, Georgetown's number 16, Michigan State's number 17, Northwestern's number 18, Santa Clara's number 19, Memphis is number 20, St. Louis is number 21, Southern California's number 22, Harvard's number 23, UCF's number 24, and Clemson rounds out the top 25. Let's see if they have the rankings out for women's volleyball yet. They do not. Because women's volleyball is also another sport that once it starts, that is a very competitive, not only the tournament, but just how it goes throughout the year. Let's see. If they have, let's jump over to cross country real quick and see if they have rankings for that yet. Granted, it is kind of early, but all right, so their preseason is going to start in 20 days. So we're going to see how that goes. For right now, we're just getting ready for football to start for college and seeing how that's going to set up. But other than that, I think that about wraps it up for this week. You can find me on Twitter at Alan F. West, or you can see me on Facebook or Instagram at alan.west.46. You can hear more tomorrow with Byron and Vic on the Jersey Boys, and we will see what happens. Other than that, this has been Alan West, Top 25 Rundown. We'll see you next week. Have a great week, everybody.